really appreciate that.
Yeah. All right, so let me just preface the next section. There's been an ongoing discussion through the IBMP partners about seroprevalence. There was some discussion about continuing the seroprevalence discussion that's gone on for multiple meetings, and some back and forth about whether we should do that or not. I think with the guidance of the lead partner, we decided to keep that section in. It's in your agenda, and Don and I sort of brainstorm out just some potential areas of discussion. I think there's seven of them listed. I believe we're going to start with some comments from Marty. We recognize, meaning the partners recognize, this is a huge, big, big discussion to go through today in what was going to be 40 minutes, and I'm hoping can be 30 minutes. We're only going to hit on a couple of these topics. Don's suggestion was that because the public and staff and partners are not necessarily clear on where the IBMP is going with its direction on seroprevalence, that what we ask for is just some kind of a description of each of these topics, and particularly some idea of the timing, and I will be recording this for the notes, of when these things are likely to either be initiated, to be completed, you know, for instance, things like the remote vaccination EIS is essentially an update. So Marty, do you want to start? And we don't have to step through the seven items that are in Invertebrate Ready's agenda, but they're there as items that have either been from the last meeting, that Don thought would be appropriate, or that were discussed via email and back and forth. So Marty, I think you were going to start on that one that's listed as number two, is that right? Doesn't matter, you start wherever you want to.
So the item that's listed in the record, in the agenda, is kind of commitment to vaccinate on the western side to in the operational theater on the west, which typically would happen in a mobile trap setup on an enforcement unit or at the airport. And so this was. You know, we obviously feel this is a priority. This is something that, Dan, Superintendent Dan, and I visited on several occasions in public as well as in this meeting as well as the private sidebar. And we were, and I think we made a commitment in this very room, if not last winter, the winter before, I think, to vaccinate or to enhance vaccination. So we did not get that done last spring, and so we are renewing that commitment, and we are putting balls in motion to vaccinate eligible bison on the west this coming season. The reason we feel is important, in addition to meeting the commitment that I made to the superintendent, we also feel that this is a following up on a commitment that, has been in the record decision as far as addressing seroprevalence. I feel that science, in fact, is does support a response to vaccination. The data from Steve Olson suggests that bison are actually more responsive to vaccine than cattle are. So the difference in abortion from unvaccinated to vaccinated bison, the difference in abortion rates is actually greater in bison than it is in cattle. And then lastly, Steve Olson. Basically, if, as far as the data is concerned, and I don't know whether we want to get into the science, but since the question was asked, approximately 45% of naive cattle abort for brucellosis. So if you have a naive group of animals, 45% will abort if they're infected with brucellosis. But if vaccinated, so not naive, only about 4% will abort. So the difference in response, for the benefit of vaccine, is about 40%. So you reduce the abortions by about 40%. As far as bison are concerned, they're much more susceptible to abortions, and approximately 85% of those abort when of animals that are unvaccinated. But if they're vaccinated, only about 33% abort. So the difference in abortion rates from unvaccinated to vaccinated animals is actually greater. So the benefits of vaccine in bison is actually greater than the benefits of vaccine in cattle. because the difference in abortion rates between unvaccinated and vaccinated bison is actually about 50% reduction in abortion rate, or a reduction in abortion rate versus about 40% reduction in count. So there's some nuances there. What I'm trying to say in the big picture is we've made a commitment to Rob. I've made a personal commitment to Dan Wink. I believe the science backs it up, and I believe that politically it's the right thing to do for the greater GYA problem as well.
Pardon me, I mentioned Dr. Olson's talk where he showed some of the data, not a referee paper, but is on the website when he was there.
So I think the challenge for us will be to decide or to address the what to do with a seropositive bison once we identify ones that are to be vaccinated on the west side. That'll probably be an operational detail that we need to work out.
What does that mean?
The traditional way that we vaccinate bison is we take the positives, we vaccinate the negatives, and then we take the positives to slaughter. And through personal communication from I think Dave and others, there's some concerns about the distribution between the central and the northern herd, and there was some anxiety about shipping positives to slaughter like we have in the past. So we can certainly be flexible in that regard. I think obviously not. We don't have the facility to hold those animals, but we can certainly mark them in some manner that they will be distinguished in the way that we discussed a few minutes ago as it pertains to the strength. Those facilities or those activities would certainly happen after the state hunt, although the tribal hunt may still continue for some time.
Morning, what you have an estimate of the number of animals that you plan to capture and therefore the number that you plan to vaccinate?
You know, that those numbers are oftentimes, those operations are capture bison in opportunistic manner, so they're able to get what they're able to get. It's difficult to assess that.
Do you have a goal?
I think the goal would be to have as big of an impact as possible on our zero prevalence.
Marty, there would be a permanent marker on the animal, or other than a temporary marker, 21 days or something?
Certainly those animals would be identified in some manner or another. So we would, as a minimum, we would put a steel tag into those animals. So we would have a reference point should those animals be captured again. And then I would expect some kind of a temporary visual marker.
Okay. Please,
go ahead. So you guys are going to do this regardless of any input that comes out of tomorrow here?
But I think this is part of that discussion. An activity that the Department of Livestock has been engaged in the past. I think it's very much in line with the IBMP goals, so I'm not sure. Certainly we'll take input and perform that operation in the most collaborative sense possible.
Marty, when was the last time that the Department of Livestock trapped and vaccinated on the west side?
I'm guessing it was probably 07, 08.
And how many years prior to that did that occur?
Well, we didn't vaccinate.
Okay, so when was the last time you vaccinated?
I believe it was 05, maybe. Right.
So what has changed from 05 to 2014 that now it's become a priority?
I wouldn't say that somehow it wasn't a priority and now it is a priority. I think it's always been, sero prevalence reduction has always been important. I think maybe we've been kind of working through how the additional tolerance and horse view would impact vaccination and those kind of populations. Hunt is a new picture. At this point, I think we can meet the seroprevalence reduction goals, or at least attempt to achieve the seroprevalence reduction goals, in addition to these other activities that are taking place. And certainly, you know, again, I've made a commitment, and I think it's important to meet that.
So if you projected how many animals you'd have to vaccinate over time to have any meaningful impact on seroprevalence, what's the end game?
The end game would be to improve the herd immunity of the herd.
Have you projected or in any way modeled what that's going to look like over time? And so you can describe, because I mean there's some trade-offs to doing this in terms of hunting opportunity and that sort of thing, and I think it would be helpful for this group to know what those trade-offs are, and in order to evaluate that, I think it would be helpful if you could tell us what projected outcome you expect over time in terms of sort of prevalence.
You know, the difficulty is that the managers here sitting at this table have really not been able to monitor the benefits of vaccinating the yellow submarine part of that bison herd, because the amount of vaccination that's been done has been insignificant as far as the population numbers. So this is an attempt to enhance that aspect of the record decision of the global warming.
So you said it, what we've done so far is insignificant. What number would be significant? That, I guess that's what I'm trying to get at. What I'm concerned about is that we're throwing darts at a dartboard without knowing where the target is, and it comes at expense, and it comes at some trade-off with hunting opportunity, etc. I think we need to identify what the target is, or at least project what we think the target is over time, how many bison we would have to vaccinate to get there. I'm just in some ways very similar to what we're doing in terms of a harvest plan. We have goals of how many we're going to harvest every year in order to bring it back to a target population level. It seems like we'd want to do the same with seroprevalence or with vaccination in order to achieve reduce seroprevalence.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think if I had brush strokes, my goal would be to reduce the prevalence of brucellosis in bison to that of the surrounding elk. And that's a long-term project, and I think that if we don't get started and commence some additional and enhanced efforts to at brucellosis suppression, I think we will be having the same conversation 20 years from now. Not you and I.
Yeah.
The other have not changed since 2005, but continued efforts since 2005, is that of expanded tolerance, both in time and in space, where bison could be. And so without at least an effort of making a reduction in seroprevalence, it makes those expanded tolerance discussions very difficult.
And that makes perfect sense to me. The only thing that I think we should be able to, I guess, hold each other accountable to is if we're taking certain steps to manage bison, whether it's, you know, hazing them back into zone two or harvesting it at a certain rate, it's with kind of an end game in mind. I mean, I understand why maintaining separation temporally and spatially between bison and cattle has some logic to it, and it's worked. I'm just looking for the same kind of logic in a vaccination program, and it seems to me what you described as Steve's results, you know, is a piece of that, But I would like to see if you could present, not necessarily today, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I think it would be helpful if you could present some projection of here's how many bison we have to vaccinate in order to achieve this reduction in seroprevalence over time, at what cost, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and lay that out. So I have a better understanding of the, obviously you can choose to do what you want, probably independent of this group, but if we want to do this collectively and agree that this is a sensible step to take collectively to achieve the goals of the IVMP, then laying out that kind of detail, I think, would be helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think some of that, but much of that work's been done by the Park Service and the EIS. I think a lot of those deliberations already took place during the that led to the record decision and the commitment to reduce seroprevalence. So I think we'd be certainly holding over some old ground. I think there's a lot of unknowns there, but you know. Again, I come back to the fact that 300 bison vaccinated at Stevens Creek over the last 13 years or so, and 80 or whatever on the west side, or 9 on the west side, thanks, I'm off by about 90%. Thinking about 9 and 9 on the west side is absolutely inadequate to monitor the benefits of the vaccination program. Absolutely inadequate. And one of our frustrations has been to throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, and say, well, vaccination hasn't been proven to work, and therefore we shouldn't pursue it. Well, I will say that we haven't actually given it the opportunity to work, and I would like to say that this would be an effort that I would hope would be duplicated or partnered with on the north side in Stevens Creek to enhance that vaccination, you know, per... Again, the goals of the IVMP, as well as our discussions here in this room, throughout and through this process.
Can I just ask, was there an action out of your Pat's request, or were you saying you were willing to?
Yeah, no, an action, the specifics and the numbers and kind of discussions about how we monitor success and those kind of things. I think there's a place for those kind of technical discussions here, and I think we probably would need to put that on a future meeting. I'm happy to work with USDA and others.
Okay. So I can put your name on for a future. Okay. Thank you.
As far as timing goes and impact to hunting opportunity, we really don't see us kicking this off until late February or early March, depending on conditions. You would all know better than I would, but I don't believe there's been any real hunting on the west side during that time frame in the last, maybe since the hunt started. So we feel it'll be well beyond the hunt on the west side.
We get a comment in
March.
What's that? Late February, early March, depending on conditions.
I think the
you
on
the north side,
yeah,
during that time frame.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah, not on the west. I don't believe it.
But just so I understand what why can't we see what's going on in the operation probably February and March.
You know, provide as much hunt as we can, and also usual snow conditions in the Hebgen Basin. January, February is just most of the time June.
Very effective. Can't wait any longer than it's in February.
Let's get a comment from David. He's been very patient waiting. Like a bird dog.
I'm going to have to make a recommendation after working with my staff and superintendent whether or not we should continue to or restart the vaccination program in Logan County. And I agree there's been a lot of science done. I think the science that's occurred over the last 13 years is going to be significantly different than what was known 13 years ago. I think that for a perfect example is the science that we have right now shows that vaccinating animals, the time that you plan to do it, is the worst event occurs, that you may be expecting almost no response from a lot of the animals. So I think it's very, very important for you're obviously kind of prior to whatever you need to do. But as an IBMP, we can use the best available science here. And we have that science, and a lot of it which will be released when we talk about number three, the status of life and remote vaccination program. And my recommendation would be very helpful to us if you could explain what you're looking to achieve over the long term, short term and long term, in terms of percent seroprevalence reduction. And then describe, after we figure out what we can do, what the goal is for that MVP. Then, I'm sure you're aware of this, we don't even have good diagnostics that help us determine whether or not the animal has been previously infected or has an active infection without utilizing it. So we're curious to know what diagnostics we can use to help determine whether or not they're successful. I think the other piece that's really critical, even though we're probably breaking one of Scott's tenets here, is this is a new world. We have a 25 million acre ecosystem with elk having, in some cases, a high level of seroprevalence. And from some of the science that we're aware of that you have cooperated on, the risk from elk versus bison is almost 100% versus bison is less than half of 1%. So absent really evaluating the overall risk here and what we can achieve, I think it's going to be very hard for me to make our recommendations. And put one way or another. I think a lot of that analysis has been done, and I think the folks that, we brought together that reviewed the science for remote vaccination made some pretty strong conclusions about this topic. So all I'm saying is, before I can make a recommendation to the superintendent on this topic, we really have to bring the best available science back together and develop a methodical plan as to what we're trying to achieve and what the risk reduction would be. Because again, the best available science right now suggests that vaccination, on top of what is already very, very low, if not negligible risk of bison, would have a negligible reduction in risk on top of the negligible existing risk. So I think it's really important that we begin this.
I would say, Dave, I guess I would ask what's changed on your guys' side of the table, because 2 years ago in Tulsa, Rick said to us that you were going to be vaccinating aggressively, and vaccinating aggressively on the north side. And really called me on the carpet and said, well, what are you guys going to do as far as vaccination? And I think it was the next meeting when Dan and Marty had their discussion. If the world was going to stay the same, this might not be as big a priority. But again, we're getting continually pushed for more tolerance in more space for more time of year. And without, you know, I don't know if vaccination is going to be the ultimate self-service option. It's the only thing I know that we have. If there's something else that can bring that seroprevalence reduction, or better diagnostics, or whatever, we would be happy to employ it. But right now, what we have is vaccination.
You know, and let me respond a little bit to that. I think the world has changed in terms of the cooperation with the on the hunt with the tribes in terms of the take of animals and looking at how and if we can vaccinate animals in terms of allowing the hunt to happen in a very safe and effective way. I think the other thing that's noteworthy is that one of the things that has been happening over the past few years is that it was always, what are you, National Park Service, going to do about vaccination of animals? That was a commitment that was made in the plan. And our response was, we've done a lot more than anyone else has done, and if it's that important, why aren't you doing it as well? And so the response is, well, we're gonna, so you're basically saying, well, it's important, we're gonna do it. But that was a question that was, perhaps at the time thought to be rhetorical, but you've now made it not a rhetorical question. Because the indication was that
you didn't ask questions.
No, but the indication was by the fact that you had not been doing it, that you did not think it was important. Of the question.
And
And you know, at that time, we thought too that we might be at the end of where the tolerance was going to be. And then the Citizens Working Group made the recommendation. We're now in an administrative process to review that recommendation. So for me, that's a big component as well. You know, the rules that will be made through the HUD, the rules that will be made on the north side, I don't know if we're going to have that big impact. Certainly, we're not going to have that big impact short term. We're not going to have a big impact short term. But we're looking at this as a long-term process. And that's that, you know, in past adaptive management changes where we've allowed more tolerance, I have looked at that as also expanded on the vaccination. Because we don't have a lot of that. I mean, just the conditions and the time don't allow for a lot of it, but it feels important to take advantage of it.
And we do too. And opportunistically, we will, you know, we are looking at continuing to have opportunistic vaccination.
But then, I just, in the sense of being completely candid here and transparent, you and I visited in the lobby of Crabtree, I think late last summer, and you asked me, well, why haven't you vaccinated? Because you made that commitment. Where have you been?
And rightfully so.
And rightfully so, because I did make a commitment in this room, I think 2 years ago. And then once the operational season came and went, we did not vaccinate. And so I said, you're absolutely right. I made a commitment. So what I'm trying to say is, what I'm trying to say is, it was more than a rhetorical question. It was an actually action-oriented question. And then the other thing that
it has been rhetorical to be asking many times until you're cursed.
And then of course, you know, the issue is the other issue that surrounds this conversation is it looks like there is a decrease in emphasis on vaccination and a decrease in the intent or commitment by some partners to do that. And I think it would be the wrong direction. We need to do what we can to try to address the problems.
During the period 2004 to 2012, was there a certain political interjection into this? Into operations that prevented you from actually capturing that?
Ending losses, but I'm not sure that's different than what it is right now. What are you thinking?
Governor orders for the
Yeah, that was no louder.
I mean, if you can't set up a trap, you can't capture an accident.
But I don't know if it was so much that line as it was with the hunt, with the state license and the treaty rights hunts. That came in that time, and not wanting to interfere with that, wanting to as much opportunity as possible.
Tom?
I think that had a big, I'm not saying there wasn't a political attack, but I think that had a bigger impact.
Yeah, from Avis's perspective, we would certainly like to see vaccine inoculated in these animals at any and every opportunity, and we realize the negative times of year and the better times of year. And, you know, we've had discussions where we would like to see vaccination of bison at other times of the year when they're more ready to respond to the vaccine in a positive way. And we've talked about it, and it's complicated, and we realize that. And to address the issue of the elk, we've had conversations recently where we are going to attempt to broaden the conversation, which is not part of the IBMP, to include elk and our three-state partners to evaluate, come up with a plan of what we can do to decrease the risk, decrease the prevalence of blue species in wildlife, both elk and bison. So there's a lot of things that we would like to do that we are prevented from doing, but I think we need to do the things that we can. And then, you know, looking at risk models and things, and, you know, we want to see what comes out in that EIS report. We also like to look at the model that was used to create that EIS report, and we've not seen it.
So can I just point out on a couple of things? Don tied together a couple of things in this list, of which we don't have to hit all, the new mandate, potential new mandate for bruce ulcer control across, including elk and bison. Artie did number two. number three and number five, the remote vaccination and the status of the Tom Hobbs predictive model, which modeling is a big request for them. Could we hit those real quick? Please.
So it sounds like you're deciding to vaccinate. What are the plans on monitoring these animals to find out what kind of protective immune response is generated? And so are we just doing this for the hell of it, or are we going to learn something?
Well, I think that, you know, the approach is similar to what the Park Service has done with vaccine, with vaccinating Weston on the northern perimeter. And, I mean, you ultimately have to release those animals, and if you wind up recapturing those animals, then perhaps there will be a difference in sort of prevalence when you're able to recapture vaccinated animals and non-vaccinated animals. That would be the classic approach. I'm open to that, and I'm open to any others that you suggest.
I guess from my QC's perspective, we're kind of looking at the effort for the partnership part of this. You know, getting inputs prior to coming into this forum and laying out a plan of action, which I know we're going to be in kind of discussion as to whether it's actually something that should be, is useful based on science. You can have argument science for as long as you want, but reality is, you know, we come into talking about a discussion where it was originally scheduled for an hour, and we're cutting back on it. And obviously, right now, I think this conversation is a priority over a lot of the other things that are on our agenda. You know, you have tribal the treaty hunting right that you're attempting to impact their ability. Now, you know, and it is all verbiage. You know, there's no hard numbers, no science, there's no goal. You know, we've committed to work with the National Park Service in Yellowstone on the shipment and slaughter of animals, something that our tribe is completely opposed forever. Only because we see a valid endpoint. We see some goals, whereas we've seen several reference sites shipping out highly reactive animals. But with this proposal, I guess I don't see the rationale, you know, and maybe some things went over my head when I sat here with the group that I think Dave held up the report. When I read the report, you know, it says there's almost no positive result from a vaccination program at this time. So, and you listed three reasons why you were doing this. One was a conversation with Dan, the middle one was reduction in disease, and the third one was politics. I think this proposal has more to deal with the politics of the situation. And, you know, from our perspective, in a partnership, I don't know how much resources one agency should throw at the politics.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. You know, that certainly, I think, for us to suggest that there's no politics in this forum, I think, would be disingenuous, because we understand that they're trying to blend science with policy to make some kind of a reasonable decision. You know, what we've proved as far as your reference to the science panel concluding the vaccination doesn't work, what we've concluded is if you vaccinate 9 bison on the west side in 13 years, you're not going to make a difference. And I would suggest that we can do better.
And then I think there's been comments that talk about what is your goal of number of animals you want to vaccinate, and what is that impact going to be on tribes that may or may not at some point want to exercise a treaty hunting right in that area. And the fact that Yellowstone National Park doesn't want animals running around the metal ear tags aren't marked in any map. So I think there's a lot of questions that prior to developing a plan from a state agency or a public agency like yourselves, that probably should have been vetted through a couple of different forms. You know, these are tribes that existed in Montana. You know, there are people that exercise a state hunting right through the state programs in Montana. That for you to say this is something you want to attempt to do in February, I spent a lot of time working with a lot of different governmental organizations and governmental structures. And it seems to be really quick for you to get to that point without a lot of
questions. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Just let's you know, bring this back to the fact that vaccination and prevalence reduction are one of the core principles of the IPMP, the plan that you are now a partner to. That is what we subscribe to. This is something that we feel is important. This is something that is not unprecedented because it has been done on the northern boundary as well as the western boundary. We are proposing a plan or we are describing a plan that would be consistent with the harvest, with a historical harvest in the last several years as far as time of the year. And lastly, the IBMP is not intended to prevent or impinge on the statutory authority of any one agency that's here. And so I think on a variety of levels, I feel that this is a very reasonable approach. And you know, we're pretty committed to not only the concept of serial prevalence reduction, but also to actually getting that done.
David, did you want to go ahead?
Yeah. Just a question to follow up on PJ. This is why I mentioned diagnostics before. You said you were going to follow the animals that you vaccinated to look at whether or not there's a change in infection. But what we know is that the vaccine does not prevent infection. It prevents abortion and shedding of the bacteria. So if you follow the same animals and they're exposed to the cell of the hornets, they're going to become infected. And in most cases. And they're going to show up as positive reactors when you test them. So efficacy, at least from my perspective, cannot be determined by following the animals that you vaccinated, recapturing them, and figuring out whether or not they got infected. The efficacy would be to determine whether or not they had a higher or lower proportion of abortions, shed less bacteria, and subsequently affected fewer animals. How are you going to follow that? I mean, that's the test.
Yeah.
So how do you plan to follow it?
That's a good point. So, I mean, certainly, you know, there may be a reduction in, what we're looking at is a reduction in transmission within the herd. So the long-term goal would be to monitor the seroprevalence of the herd. But also, I mean, if you recapture that animal the following year, you'd be able to see if that seronegative animal, even if she is seropositive the following year, because she's carrying that calf germ, which of course is already avoided. So that would be one opportunity to measure success, is to see whether those pregnancies are carried to term on initially infected animals. And that would include or involve an increased monitoring and interest in calf recapturing those animals and then the commitment that we all commit.
So it sounds like we have a long day that commitment. So I guess getting back to PJ's original point, unless there is a well thought out management plan with resources put towards learning something, which none of that exists right now. You're going to be given a bunch of ice and a shot of RB51, and there's not much else that, at least based on the plan we have today, we can learn from this effort.
Well, so my piece up here is probably an invitation to the Park Service to participate in monitoring those animals for pregnancy rates, and then when those animals are captured and then
I'd be happy to evaluate that and make a recommendation to the superintendent, but until you can provide us with some more details, really all I can do is provide a synopsis of what Pat Flowers mentioned. And I think, to me, that's a precursor, that's an overarching discussion and project management plan or proposal that we would really appreciate if you could lay out for us to look at. Once we understand that and feel that all the science supports your goals, if we also want to get on board with that, then we can consider maybe commitment to the lottery side. I think the overarching issue is, should we do it and can we do it, is really important.
Please.
In regards to interfering with the tribal hunt, as it was mentioned, on the Yellowstone or on the west side, it's quite a bit different on the Gardner side. You know, you have a mile-wide corridor coming out going into Garden Basin, where on the west side it's 10 miles wide. And never at any time in the past 15 years, when we were capturing quite a number of animals, did we capture all of them. Where that capture facility sits on the west side is on private property as well. So the treaty hunt, you know, would not be affected there. But there's so much area, and we're not going to go within, even if we wanted to, it would be impossible to gather each and every one of them. So there's going to be opportunities for hunt if they decide, or whoever decides to hunt that way, there's still going to be hunting opportunities there as well.
I guess my point on that was just that, you know, that's something that's going to be implemented in February. You know, you look at this winter ops plan with the tribes and the legal counsel there, you know, they're going through a line-by-line kind of discussion on there, getting into that kind of document. Here, we're just going to put words in the air. You know, there's really nothing for the tribes to evaluate or any other partner here to evaluate as to what's the end goal, what all constitutes this kind of action. So I use it as just kind of an example of something that, you know, I think the tribe would like to see that they're writing. You know, from our viewpoint, I would like to see, you know, what actually is the value in the program, because even now, I think Karen is explaining it, you know, at some point, you're counting on other partners to provide their resources in this partnership, this part of the partnership in your project, by saying you want Yellowstone National Park to do some testing, recapture, and sampling that after the time. You know, and so it seems like it should have been more combined on the front end, because if other partners don't agree with it, it's going to be real hard for them to commit resources.
I guess I would suggest that I would probably refer you to the record decision and the EIS, because you know that a lot of that has already been
Kate, please.
Today, the Park Service need to remember that APHIS, with our state colleagues, have a long history of brucellosis disease control and eradication, and one of our main tools was vaccine. We've done it, and this is a whole new complexity with bison and park, but we have to do what we can do.
Keith, if you have one comment, and then let's see if we'll see where we are, and then I'm going to check in. Go ahead, this will be the last thing for a moment.
The rod, I don't think there's any question that the rod decision was centered around the idea of reducing and eliminating resources. But it's also built around adaptive management. And the goal is no transmission and to establish a wild native population outside the park. So I think that the twin goals that Seattle recites and start, you know, by the misstated within the bison management areas outside the park. Okay. So we're really grateful for the efforts of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks and for the Park Service last year to hold the conference on the political schedule. We had a fairly comprehensive discussion with a lot of researchers about the strategy of vaccinating out on the edge of the park and the discussion of vaccinating through the park and the scope of the effort and what it's like. You're right, I think for the ops plan for this year, if you're to say that you're intending to do this in regards as an action of the Department of Livestock, you're probably not going to have a lot of impact on this first 3D harvest in West Yellowstone for the 3 or 4 weeks. If it's not a big deal to you guys, moving it 3 or 4 weeks later would be a blessing for us. But if we're leaving the flavor of the plan, the ops plan, being our plan for what we're doing this year, and we're rediscussing vaccination as a strategy, we've got bigger issues. So if the struggle is to reinitiate a vaccine program over at Stephen Street and get into it in a large fashion, then we've got a lot of large and deep and broad concerns that we need to be talking about that are not anywhere else. Because we're feeling the science that was presented last year says that vaccination is not a, it's not a strategy that is going to be viable for you.
I'll just answer that on two counts. Fair enough. On the one account regarding the science panel, I've made my concerns fairly vocal, so I won't feel like they're in here, but I feel that they weren't necessary. Those recommendations were very limited by geography as well as by the composition of the panelists. But secondarily, I believe that the vaccination has taken a backseat for the last several years, primarily due to the hunting interest and making sure that we can satisfy the interests of the tribes and the huntable population. And what I'm saying, I think we do both. And I think on the west side, certainly, we're providing an opportunity to do both. And on the north, in the ops plan that we just discussed, there's an opportunity to potentially do both. And I think we're just learning as we go along as far as to ensure that hunting and vaccination are not mutually exclusive. We talked about retaining animals for 21 days a week full-time in the facility. So I think we're learning as we go along as far as being able to meet people for the purpose.
So may I ask, just a second, John, may I ask in working toward closing the discussion of the MBOEL plan as Martin presented, one item that's come up multiple different times essentially is this an autonomous MBOEL decision versus is an IBMP decision? Are we at a point where at least we could define that? Because if it's an IBMP decision, clearly there's got to be more things that go on. And you may say, no, I don't want to talk about that. But that point is permeating through all of these side discussions.
Yeah, I mean, I would suggest that this issue is lies within the authority of the Montana Department of Livestock, such as other activities lie within the discretion of other agencies. So I guess that would be probably the way I would catch it.
Right.
But it is part of the plan.
I think it is a part of the decision.
Right. So with both, Scott, I don't know how else to, you can't necessarily slice that baby.
Okay, but the other part is this group does not meet again until after this program would be underway. So if it's part of the IBMP, then this discussion, sort of as Jim had said, needs to just go on and on and on, or there needs to be a place to pick this up outside of this meeting. So we need some action to close this discussion, or else this discussion needs to continue.
This is our last formal meeting, the operations calls will be initiated 1st of January as soon as we feel the need to start them, and then we have weekly, bi-weekly operations call, which I'm sure the discussion of numbers and hunts and vaccination and any other number of issues will come up on those operation calls.
Yeah, so I think there will be an opportunity to discuss some of the details, but I guess I would probably, to address your previous question, I think the way to probably express it is that this is the, we would be acting within our statutory authority under the auspices of the IBMP and certainly consistent with the IBMP. So that would be probably most accurate.
Okay. Pat, could you comment?
Christian, anymore? You guys have the authority to do what you're going to do, and you may or may not do it, no matter. As habitat expands, and looking at expanded habitat, I understand that you guys have some constituents who are asking, what are you going to do to protect us? And maybe increasing vaccination is an element that you guys think will help do that. To the extent that you can do it so it doesn't interfere with the hunt or the farming, travel, and just certainly appreciate that. I think, though, maybe there needs to be some recognition as an educational component to be helpful to note the limited possibility of vaccination have. You're going to do a few animals every year. I thought Dr. Olson said last year, maybe I heard it wrong or interpreted it wrong, but it's endemic in the environment there. Other species are probably more likely vectors, and you can remove the results from the bison population, but they essentially can be infected. You know, I thought since the working group had said, at least the recommendation was physical barriers and vaccination increasing in cattle may be more effective. So if you're going to do what you're going to do unilaterally, you have the authority, but so long as there's maybe the understanding, or as you guys get called, or get some pressure politically, an educational component out to the folks that this is maybe a limited value, that it's not a silver bullet, and it may not even change the sort of prevalence of rice. I don't know if that gets communicated or not, but I think that's probably something that needs to be recognized as we're going through. You know, more than just to check the box. Hey, it says it in the wild, we're supposed to do it here, we do it. Maybe we're coming up with that. They were saying, is there any games or points or monitoring? Jim's talked about it, the ongoing archer where it goes. So those are just some thoughts. You know, recognizing the situation you guys are in, but also the situation that we're in the overall people.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think probably a better way to
couch that, I think we all understand that there is no easy silver bullet, like you said, solution to this problem, otherwise we would not be here. So everything we do is just part of the solution. And none of what we do can entirely address the conflicts that we're discussing. So I think it just needs to put on those in that context, and it's part of the solution.
Okay, let's get McCoy. Okay, we got more comments. McCoy and Pat.
I was going to say that it would be a solution that's going to be part of the trying to go on longer as supporting the vaccination based on the science that will have to do what happens to the as far as the science now.
Thanks. Let's get Pat as a partner, and then we.
Marty, the reason why I decided not to comment is because I think you said exactly what I was going to say is in the current IBMP, this is a tool that we said we're going to use in certain ways, and we haven't, but we also haven't eliminated it as a tool through adaptive management. So it still exists, you're going to use it, and unless we're going to take it up as an adaptive change to say this is no longer a valid tool, I think go forth and do what you're going to do under, as you said, under the authority of the IBMP. I think in the long run, I think this is a topic that we need to keep talking about and keep thinking about, okay, what are we getting out of this? Is it worth it? Still makes sense to use this as a tool. And that's kind of what was my point. We started to focus on it last year in the context of the Parks decision on remote vaccination, but we haven't in the broader context of vaccination period. And so I guess I would just ask that as we move down the road, we keep bringing the best science to this. And I think the clearer we can be about value we're getting from every piece of management that we're applying to these bison, I think the better off we are in describing to the public what we're doing and why, and also I think we're better off in working with each other on that level of justifying our own actions, I guess.
Angel, please.
I think that for ITDC and for ITDC, our goal is to be supportive of the tribes that have the treaty members. But ITDC also has a larger role of protecting the bison in their habitat and trying to prevent unnecessary interference of those animals in that habitat. And I think that it's difficult for us to be a partner and have a partnership here at this table and then sort of be surprised about an action that you're going to take without vetting it with everyone here so that we can have some sort of comfort and agreement and understand that there is a viable outcome, that it makes sense, that it's a good way to approach this problem. So I think for ITBC, there's two issues here. One is we want to make sure that any of these plans do not interfere with the hunting rights, and that water will be carried by our treaty tribes to make those arguments. So there's also sort of the overall issue of, is this something that warrants interference with these animals if there isn't a measurable outcome that we can identify? And then third, I think that I have to say that I think that this organization has tried to emphasize a partnership and a meeting of the minds and working together and complementing each other on the efforts that we do make. And this seems to just fly in the face of that somewhat, because it sounds like you're unilaterally going to do what you feel you need to do. You do have the authority to do it, but it's difficult for us to all have buy-in and feel comfortable and feel like we're all actually meeting with partners. ITBC, and I think that looking at Jim and Urban and Tree, I don't think ITBC can say that we support this activity right now as part of an IBMP initiative.
I'd like, if we could, to close this and go on to a couple other items, and I suspect we're not going to do all seven of these items. Would that be acceptable? I'm going to wait until somebody yells at me, because I think we're starting to go in circles and we're not progressing further from this. Thanks, Scott. Could we, the status of the EIS, remote vaccination EIS, the Tom Hobbs paper, and I think actually the boundary vaccination, I think are all kind of wound up into one. And again, what we originally started to talk about was sort of a topic description and a time frame that these things might come to resolution or they're done or whatever. David, you look like
so. I'll do number 3 and 5 quickly. The final environmental impact statement on remote vaccination is being reviewed in Washington. We expect that it will be out for a 30-day public review period in the next 2 to 4 weeks. And after that period of time, shortly after that period of time, we'll prepare a better decision.
Okay.
And Okay. And then on Tom Hobbs predictive model, I think there might be a little bit of misunderstanding about some of the information that we considered in our remote vaccination environmental impact statement during the science panel review. I would point out that the model that was largely used for evaluating vaccination strategies in the remote vaccination EIS was published in the journal Vaccine in 2010. We can make that available to anybody that's interested. And a synopsis of it is in the report that was put together by the Bruce Lowe Science Review Workshop panel. There are other models that were also used in the EIS. They included models that were, and modeling work that was done by Brad Schumacher, who now works for the University of Wyoming, and Marty participated in those efforts. And so there are a number of models that we used to inform the decision-making process for the environmental.
Yeah, I guess my confusion was, I thought you were going to provide us a link to that paper, and then that we requested recently, and I told it was not done yet. So that's what I choose.
The Tom Hobbs model.
Tom Hobbs. Tom, what Tom, John can correct me for a moment. What Tom Hobbs did is, Tom's got some specializes. He presented all his work at the conference we had in this room. But he specializes trying to use uncertainty to inform decision making. And what he did was he took the modeling that John did in 2010 and published in Vaccine. And some of the assumptions that we had made about the efficacy of the vaccine, for example, which were quite frankly extremely optimistic, and said, let's say you put some more realistic assumptions into the model. What is the likelihood of achieving your desired outcome? That's kind of the discussion that we're having with Mark when he presented those data. My understanding is he has a draft report. We submitted some comments, and we're expecting his revised report to come back soon, by the end of the month. So when we have that, we can share. But most of the, that was only, all I'm trying to find out is that was only one of several models that are used to inform decision making.
Right. Yeah. I don't want to beat this vaccination thing to death, but one of the benefits of shepherding the Hobbs plan is that I'm pretty intimate with it. Well, hey, you know, the Hobbs plan that we just went on paragraph 3, it says, Bison and Stevens Creek facility that are not designed to slaughter may be temporary out and released when winter weather moderates in spring or earlier to provide operational space and short finally. All calf yearly and non pregnant adult female bison released from the capture facility after the conclusion of the hunting season, approximately March 15th, will be vaccinated when they're supposed to be able to live with a safe vaccine. So if you substitute the west side of Stevens Creek, and these guys have already made accommodation to enable hunting, what is the difference in the conversation we've been having with the things that we just talked about in the last point about vaccination?
Thanks, Ryan. I didn't know we actually... No, on the serious side, that's exactly the point I'm trying to make. This is an integral part of the IBMP. This is something that we have time and time again made commitments to that we haven't fully taken advantage of, and all I'm doing here is I'm restating our commitment to that, to those activities. I mean, this is not new stuff.
This is by no means new stuff. So thank you.
Thanks, Ryan.
The only thing I would add is the only difference is we have been trapping on an ongoing basis at Stevens Creek. We haven't been trapping on an ongoing basis on the west side. And so in that sense, this represents a pretty important change on the west side over recent history. That's, in my mind, that's the difference.
We're at 5 minutes to noon. What I'd like to do is see, ask Dawn, I think, as appropriate, if we want to hit any of the rest of these. Brucellosis suppression as an IBMP goal. This group has discussion of overall value of seroprevalence as a tool. These are today, tomorrow, the next day, and next week discussions, clearly. So in 5 to 10 minutes, we're probably not going to do that. Do we want to even open this up to these items?
I thought we already been doing.
Sorry, fine, yeah. But what I'm wary of is potentially we're going to go on and on and on. And so I'd like maybe some guidance from you about whether what you'd like to hit that's left on this list. Again, this was a brainstorm list of yours and mine that doesn't have to all be hit.
Yeah, my guidance is that this is going to be a topic that's going to be ongoing. And certainly it will probably appear on the agenda of our next meeting, especially in light of the record decision and the release of the model that was used in the decision-making process. So it's going to be ongoing. Just keep it in the parking lot for an agenda item at our next meeting.
Do you are you ready to say let's do lunch, reset a little bit the afternoon agenda, or would you like to pour in?
First, I want to apologize to Pete, and then I would ask him what he would like to do.
Yeah. And Pete, I think could come back after lunch. Is that right? Absolutely. Okay. I'm going to look at the partners only, not partners and staff. Are the partners willing? Again, Don and I brainstormed this list. None of the partners actually put this list up from things that have been discussed. Are we ready to close this discussion as far as we're going to get today? Or is there anything here or separately on seroprevalence that we want to make sure gets on the table? Again, with a goal for both the public and staff and partners, you know, having some sense of where this group is going. One thing this group, I think, is clearly decided, and I've heard of about 4 different places, is this is going to be an ongoing topic. And if I continue to facilitate, I will have that just as the line that gets pulled forward. I'm waiting for someone to yell and say, we have to talk about. Okay. What I'd like to do then is close.